I guess what I was really getting at, well, until Elon invents time travel, what I was really getting at was from a psychologist's point of view, because I'm curious about the brain and how it works, is the neurons and the processes that are firing up in here when I'm in the kitchen putting a speech together, or if I'm sitting at my desk trying to create that mental map, is the processes in the brain the same thing?
It is. Yeah. It's just, you have better feedback in the scenario that you gave. Yeah. In both cases, you're creating a mental hologram of the future.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Be Successful podcast. My name is Brian Elam, owner of Dream Biz Coaching, where I help entrepreneurs, coaches, consultants, and experts grow their business in a way that is fun, using the three M's of business: your mindset, your messaging, and your marketing. So today I've got an amazing guest. This is actually the first doctor that I've had on the show. So I am super excited to pick his brain and to give you tons of value and knowledge today. Dr. Todd Snyder, I'm going to read his bona fides because there's a lot of them, so I don't mess them up. Okay. So he completed both a master's degree and a doctoral degree at Baylor University Department of Psychology and Neuroscience. He is a certified 12-week trainer and a graduate of the College of Executive Coaching and a fellow of the Institute of Coaching. He's worked as a self-discipline coach, stress management consultant, productivity consultant for people all over the globe. And he believes in being a student of what he coins the active ingredients of success. So we've got a lot we're going to get into today. I'm super excited. So thank you, Todd, so much for being here today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Brian.
Absolutely. So the first thing that I wanted to touch on is something that I know a lot of people struggle with when, even if they're going to a related field of coaching or consultancy, you know, breaking out of that corporate structure or their former business, even if those fields are related, they suffer from imposter syndrome, even though they're highly qualified to make that transition. It's because they've never started the business or they've never done it like this before. That whole thing of, well, can I do this? Will people trust me? It's the first time I've done a business. You know, is it possible? It creeps in. Did that ever happen for you?
You know, I totally understand that experience, and it resonates with me. I personally never experienced that at sort of the visceral level. Sometimes at the cognitive level, I'd think through, now, wait a minute, what if they ask me this, what will I say? You know, that kind of questioning your own positioning on something. But I typically have worked backwards. And I think that's probably true of most of the people listening, that you develop an expertise and then you realize, you know what, this would be very valuable to a lot of people. And so then you've already got the ability to help people. And it's really just going backwards to, I should really try to help other people understand that I have this value. And so I think there are some people, especially in the world of life coaching, or some of these people that come in through an avenue that feels less official, where it can create this pressure from some of the gurus who are teaching some of these strategies to extend yourself beyond and try to claim some sort of level of expertise that you don't fully embrace in reality yet, but that you want to. And, you know, it's something my friend Nir Eyal, the author of the book Indistractable, said to me. It kind of shocked me at first when he said this, but then I thought about it and I realized, oh, you know, he's right. He said, there's a lot of people out there who experience imposter syndrome. And for a lot of them, it's because they are trying to be an imposter. So just don't do that. Actually develop the expertise. And then if you combine that with going backwards to think, wait a minute, what does my client want? Whether it's a huge business or it's an individual, if you can deliver on what they want, if you can help them to go from point A to point B, and you have confidence in that, then you can take the pressure off yourself, because it's not about you, right? It's about the results that you're able to bring about. And as long as you keep the focus on that, then whatever this person asks you, let's say they say, well, you know, why should I trust you? Or how many years of experience do you have? Or, you know, what's your background in? And then they name whatever industry they're in, and you're thinking none. You don't need to say, none, I'm an imposter, I'm a fraud, I can't help you. What you want to do is you want to say, I bet you're asking that question for a reason. And it has to do with getting from point A to point B. You want to make sure that if we engage in this way, that we're going to actually be able to achieve that result. Am I right? And of course, they're going to say, well, yeah, I mean, that's the reason for this. And that's then your segue into, well, here's how I can do that and why my background and experience uniquely fits with the goal that you're trying to accomplish. And if that's not true, of course, you want to back away. You would never want to sell your services to somebody that you didn't believe you could actually help. And that would be not only unethical, but you're not going to get the results for them that you want. And so you've just lost an opportunity to develop a case study testimonial where you could have spent that time working with someone that is your perfect client, where you can really get them from point A to point B. And the difference is so huge that they're happy to talk about how much you've helped them.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It's a great question, Brian. I think the more times you have that experience of someone saying, you know what, I'm amazed at where I was and how far we've come in the short period of time that we've worked together, the more of those experiences a person has, of course, it starts to erase that imposter syndrome. And instead, it reverses it to, man, if people only knew how valuable I could be or how valuable our company could be in serving them, then that becomes the new constraint, right? It's the real issue that holds people back from that point forward.
Right. Right. So something you said in there kind of triggered my training as far as high ticket closing from back in the day. You kind of pivoted that question of the person asking you basically to justify your experience, you know, making sure that you're the right fit to help them. Mm-hmm. And it was a great pivot, but you still kind of went down, you know, the theoretical rabbit hole a little bit of justifying why your experience is a perfect fit. So in your mind, is that really justifying or is it something else?
You know, I personally never enter into a conversation with a client in any kind of combative or justifying mentality. It's an exploration of, do we fit or not? And so if you have confidence that I really am going to help you accomplish your goal, then of course you want to go out of your way to help them understand how you're going to help them do that. And so it's not justifying. You don't need to justify yourself. You don't need to justify your approach. All you need to do is look for, is there a match here or not? And so I think it's a very different mentality. Sometimes people who are trained in high ticket closing, they get into this combative mindset, thinking it's like it's me against the prospect. And I find that generally prevents the sale from being as smooth as it could be, mm-hmm. because then you're working too hard. And if you have genuine expertise, you just need to put it on display for that person to be able to understand what it is and let them choose if they want to invite you into their world to use that expertise to accomplish their goals.
Yeah, absolutely. And I felt that way from the example that you gave. I just wanted to clarify that and kind of smooth it out for any other possible high ticket closers that might be listening that they might have caught that as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in making that transition again, in realizing that your skill set can help so many people, how did you start to narrow down the person or the type of business that you really wanted to help?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question too. A lot of people stay frozen when they think about becoming a consultant or a coach because they feel like they have to know what the niche is first. And there's no doubt that that would give you a tremendous opportunity if you could just perfectly read the mind of your clients and determine if there's a product market fit for a particular niche that you're choosing. I love the idea of it, you know, being able to just discover before you even start mentioning your services. In most cases though, I think that desire to have it all nailed down perfectly can prevent a person from taking action. So there's the question, do you choose your niche first or do you let your niche choose you or kind of discover what your niche is through time? And so if someone is feeling frozen, I would always recommend that you just start by getting smaller. So instead of saying, like my niche is going to be massage therapists with five or less massage therapists working in their company, and you know, this X revenue or something like that. And you just feel like, but I'm not sure if that's the right niche. I don't know if there's a demand for the kind of service I'm selling yet. When I say start smaller, what I mean is choose something, go down a step. If you break down all the various skills that you have for helping a business owner or an individual with whatever goals you help with, if you break that down smaller to a smaller niche piece of it, and you say, well, regardless of what else is going on, I'm 100% certain that this is valuable, this little piece right here. And I'm sure that I can find someone that wants that piece. So you go and you start delivering that particular piece, and it's like a niche within a niche, and you don't have to brand yourself as that, right? It's just an offer at this point. And in fact, developing your niche actually works better if you start by doing more of the one-to-one kind of interactions, instead of putting out there sort of a branding message and using attraction marketing. So more direct outreach towards just the right type of person. And then again, it should be a conversation. Would this be useful to you? And if you can get 5 or 10 people out of the first 50 that you might talk to who say, absolutely, please do that for me. What's naturally going to happen is once you've successfully plugged that piece in for them, what are they going to do next? They're going to ask you, hey, could you also help with fill in the blank? And you may not even know what that is, but that may help you discover your niche, where you start to realize that, okay, 5 people asked me for help with that. 4 out of those 5, when I was done, asked me for help with this additional thing. And it's a much bigger chunk of effort or work or accomplishment. Then that might start to show you how you can evolve your niche over time. I do believe a lot of people are terrified of putting out the idea that I do this, you know, like I help X with Y, you know, I help massage therapists with revenue growth or whatever the specific thing is that they choose. And they're terrified to put that out there because what if I have to change it 2 months from now when I discover it wasn't the right fit or people didn't really want that? And so that's why I say start smaller. Don't do the huge branding thing if it's keeping you frozen. But if you do have the courage to just throw it out there and say, I'm helping people with this, then remember that most people could care less what your website said 3 months ago. What people want is help. And there are numerous examples of highly successful consultants and coaches and entrepreneurs of various sorts that do B2B work, where they have pivoted multiple times and or have multiple offers underneath the broader umbrella of kind of whatever ends up being their unifying theme or niche.
That's absolutely right. One of the things that I put out there all the time when I'm engaging in groups or talking online to people is basically that, yes, if you can, pick a niche that's obviously closely related to your coaching or consulting expertise, but realize that you're allowed to change your mind.
Yes.
Like you're allowed to move and grow and change. Right. It's like, you're not stuck in this one thing. And you're absolutely right. You know, online, especially if you're like, you know, my clients, they're online coaches and consultants. The online attention span is like that of a gnat. You know, you don't remember what, you know, your friend posted online yesterday or your acquaintance right. posted online a week ago, they're yeah. not going to remember either. So you're allowed to change your mind.
Tell them the story. You know, if they say, hey, I thought you used to help, you know, places that paint cars to get more services, more customers in the door. Now you're saying that you help SaaS businesses, and you can just tell them the story. Yeah, I started with that. And then we discovered that they had this opportunity to work on a software that would help upgrade. And then they sold their software to other businesses that ran the same sort of car painting business. And then from there, I just realized, you know what, there's a lot of SaaS businesses that could use the marketing that we just did. So I helped this person with this, again, go smaller aspect of their SaaS. And then next thing I knew, I was full tilt working in this space. So people love stories, you know, of the hero's journey. So why not leverage that as much as you can?
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. It just gives you another story to tell, and stories sell. Absolutely. Awesome. Well, one of the other things that I touched upon in your bio was what you call the active ingredients for success. So that's a really great hook, and I'm hooked. So you got me. What are the active ingredients for success?
Well, it's not a list, but that would be pretty awesome if it was. If I had boiled it down, I was like, here's the 7 things You know, Stephen Covey did a pretty good job with that, I suppose. But you know, there's rarely one set that fits all. And so when I say the active ingredients of success, what I'm talking about is something that everyone's already familiar with. I'm just really repackaging that concept, which is Pareto's principle, the 80-20 concept, that whatever success means to you, however you define that, whether it's hitting $1 million in your investment account, or if it's building your team to 50 employees, however you define success, if it's just time off with your kids, there are going to be a lot of wasted time activities that people get this feeling like, I just need to fill my time. I need to work harder. And most of the time, if we're very careful at looking at what are the active ingredients of success, we're going to be able to boil that down to a very small number of things. And it's not that this is rocket science. It's not even that difficult. It's just a matter of asking some questions that helps the person you're talking to do that. And they could have done it on their own, but you become the catalyst that helps them to remember something they already knew, but got buried under all the responsibilities of being a business owner, running a business, having too many roles, too many hats, whether it's personal, family, being business owner, being in various roles to your clients. It just gets buried. And so sometimes you just need someone to help you to uncover those few things, those maybe 3 to 5 things that really are the needle movers. And then to repeatedly bring your attention back to that. Because if there's one thing I've discovered from years of working with entrepreneurs and being their private confidant and being the person that helps them to form a business strategy, it's that we are very vulnerable to shiny object syndrome. We start working on something because it's really exciting. We can see, we have a vision for how that could unfold. And then we see another opportunity, we start working on that. And then another, and pretty soon we have 16 things that are all, we're kind of juggling all 16 things. And if you occasionally have someone help you to stop and ask that question of how many of these 16 things are the most important opportunity to move you as quickly as possible toward how you've designed and defined success, usually the answer is, well, not 16. And so that's why I use two core concepts with the entrepreneurs that I work with. The first one is called one goal of money. And that's just the simple idea that if you choose one goal and you say, I'm going to bring that to a point of completion, meaning it is now generating revenue for the company, instead of doing all 16 things at once, find the one that's closest to completion, even if it's not the one that's going to be the most lucrative in the long run. Which one is closest to being finished? That if you could press go and it moves from, you know, the blueprint stage or the we're halfway done stage, or, you know, all of these things that require time and effort from you and or your team, but it's not actually generating revenue yet. If you can just accomplish one of those things, and now that's bringing in revenue, you take that revenue and you apply it to speeding up the next goal, maybe one of the other 16 things. And then you take that money, once you've brought in a new source of cash from actually finishing something, then you apply both of those to the third one. And it becomes this rolling snowball effect of momentum, where you end up smashing through all 16 of your goals way, way faster than you would have if you had just tried to simultaneously work all of them. And this is another business principle, not one that I made up, but it's DROOM, which is an acronym that stands for don't run out of money. That's principle number one, right? You're done as a business owner if you have no cash flow and you just have to go get a job somewhere.
That's right.
It's not fair to your employees. It's not fair to you. It's not fair to your family. It's not fair to your business dream. So don't run out of money. And one of the ways you can prevent that is find what is the one goal that if I could just bring it to completion would unlock more cash flow that makes everything else possible. And so that concept of one goal to money, it's couched. The very next step, once you've determined, you know, what is our one goal to money, the thing that we're closest to finishing, then you want to start to activate the theory of constraints. And the theory of constraints asks us to look for bottlenecks. So classically, this came out of the manufacturing world, right? Where you say, let's say we're manufacturing bottles, and we have machine one that makes the glass component, forms it, the glass mold. Maybe machine two makes the bottle caps. Let's say machine one can do 100 bottles per hour, and machine two can do 10 bottle caps per hour. How fast are you going to be able to sell bottles? You're never going to exceed 10 per hour, so long as you keep this current setup, right? And so that shows you, the theory of constraints shows you where you should focus your manpower and or your financial energy. And so you'd want to buy two or three. Ideally, you'd want to buy a lot more of those bottle caps. I'm trying to do the math and I just decided I'm not going to make people wait for me to do the math. Went back in my head, how many bottles did I say? But you'd want to buy enough to where that's no longer the bottleneck. But then what happens once you're printing same number of bottles as you are caps? Well, let's say now you've gotten to 100 per hour. Your revenue has 10x'd at this point. But what's going to happen is now you're going to have a new bottleneck. That is always the case. There's always a bottleneck in any business at all times. It's just that it shifts. And so a lot of my work with entrepreneurs is helping them to identify where has the bottleneck shifted to now. So I actually just got off the phone with an entrepreneur who's building up their e-commerce business. And we identified one of the bottlenecks currently is just the total number of ads that they're able to get eyeballs on, right? And so what we've determined is they've really maxed out one platform. These guys are very skilled, which that's very difficult to do, to get to a point where you've completely maxed out platform. So don't prematurely assume that that's something likely to happen soon. But these guys have done that. They're true experts in digital marketing space. And so what we've done is we recognize, you know what, we really need to shift to having multiple platforms for selling this product. And so now they have gotten to a place where they've accomplished that. They are on a second platform. But now the bottleneck has shifted. It's no longer that we don't have enough eyeballs to get to enough ads, enough traffic, essentially. Now the new bottleneck is we're not experts at this new platform. And that then getting really clear about that helps us to then think during our coaching calls. Essentially, I'm just a thinking partner to an entrepreneur. And so we go through this process and I'm just trying to bring out their genius, right? The business owner almost always knows more than you, unless you're a true consultant with a true expert consultant in a particular industry in a particular process, and you're bringing the knowledge, which, you know, sometimes that happens. But in most cases, as consultants, at least as an executive coach, I'm working to unlock the genius that lives within the mind of the business owner. And so at that point, we start thinking outside the box. We know what we want, but do we have a plan to get it? We do, but it's not a great one. How can we speed that up? So then we start thinking things like, all right, well, who already has the expertise? Because we could go through a bunch of courses and try to learn it ourselves, but we're losing potentially $100,000 per day, every day that passes that we're not expanding our ads on this platform. So at that point, we're thinking, all right, who can we hire that can quickly come in and help us to build out our set of SOPs, our standard operating procedures for generating ads that work on this particular platform, doing the media buying activities that work there. So the point I'm making through this illustration is just that the bottleneck is always shifting. And so identifying those active ingredients for success comes down to figuring out what is the goal that is going to be most useful to the company's revenue in the short term. And then what is the constraint that's holding us back from accomplishing that? And that's where identifying what that is a moving target. But the entrepreneurs who get good at that, they're the ones who are able to keep expanding and growing until you're doing things like you're bored and you're trying to think, well, let's go to Mars and let me send a car into orbit, one of my Teslas, because you've accomplished that process enough times that now it's just, you're really at the top of the ecosystem and able to get creative.
Yeah. And definitely the last example you gave of somebody creative, I think is about the pretty much the pinnacle as far as entrepreneurship that we've seen so far. That guy is just, I don't know, that guy's brain, I think, is like implanted from an alien society or something. I don't know how he thinks of all of that stuff that he does and puts it out there.
Did you ever watch Men in Black, the movies?
Yeah, what? I think I've seen all of them.
I love those movies. They're so fun. I don't remember which one it was, but at one point they showed a screen where they were monitoring a bunch of aliens who are pretending to be humans. And there's all of these little like video feeds of what they're doing. And one of them was Tony Robbins. And one of them was not Shaq. I'm so bad with sports. Who's the guy who dyed his hair blonde, had all the tattoos, that had a bad rep for a while?
Oh, Dennis Rodman.
Rodman, right.
Yes.
You know, it's like they just pick these famous people. And everyone's kind of in the back of their mind thought, different than the rest of us.
Yeah. But
the other day, my son said something. I don't know. Maybe he got this off a meme on the internet or something, but I thought he was pretty creative. He said, "Hey, Dad, how did he say that?" He said, "You know how Elon Musk is trying to do some really unusual things, and a lot of times he's talking about how he thinks, you know, aliens might have been involved with getting life started, or something that is, you know, we're somehow living in this fake world that's all AI driven or something." He's like, "And you know how he's trying to get to Mars? Well, what if he's really just trying to get home?" And it just struck me funny, just thinking through my son's perspective as a 13-year-old, he's thinking about, wait a minute, this guy trying to get to Mars so bad, what would he want there unless he is an alien? So anyway, just a funny moment in our household.
That's hilarious and also pretty deep. That's kind of awesome. He's trying to get home. Oh, man. So going back to what you were talking about as far as like the bottlenecks, and it's a moving target and things like that, is there a way that in your experience that you've seen, you can kind of go down this thought experiment of, okay, so if we fix bottleneck A, like what will bottleneck B be? That way you can kind of get ahead of it.
Absolutely. Yes. So that's another of the foundations of the coaching that I do. It comes down to enriching your mental map of the future. So, you know, as a psychologist, I've spent years of my life studying IQ testing, theory of intelligence. I've had to sit through, you know, so many hours, you wouldn't even want to know, of just learning the intricacies of item analysis, for example, within IQ tests. How do you use mathematical algorithms to get down to which questions really do differentiate between those of us who have the neurological advantages with intelligence versus the questions that don't seem to contribute much to distinguishing between someone that's at the lower end of the IQ scale and someone that's at the higher? In any case, I say all that to say, just for a foundation of how funny it was for me, that I was actually listening to a theoretical physicist talking about the advancement of AI and different things like this. And he said, you know, I think the best definition of intelligence is actually just your capacity to create an enriched mental map of the future, such that you're able to sidestep the hurdles and go directly toward what it is you want. And it just clicked in my brain. Like, we have all of these different aspects of intelligence, you know, like your fluid intelligence and your linguistic intelligence and crystallized intelligence, which is, you know, just school learning, being able to memorize things. But then there's all these others that people have talked about, like Gardner as a theoretical intelligence researcher, who talks about things like, well, what about the artistic or social skills, which are all forms of intelligence as well. So we have all of these different varying things, but they all fit really well. And it just suddenly clicked in my brain. I was like, well, however you want to define all of these various subcategories of intelligence, really it's about, are you able to get what you want? And so a person who is highly intelligent, even if they dropped out of school and became a bank robber, something rather asocial, if their IQ is high enough, if their capacity to create a rich mental map of the future is high enough, they know how to enter into that bank and get the people to respond the way they want to give them the money. They know how to dodge the traps that the police are going to be setting up for them as they try to make their getaway. So you don't have to be good at math. You know, maybe that guy flunked his algebra test, but he's able to create such a rich mental model of the future. He's able to sidestep all of the things that would block him from his goal. Now, you and I, hopefully, I think you and I, Brian, I know you well enough to say we both would not set a goal like robbing a bank, but whatever our goal is, that same concept applies, right? That if you can develop a richer mental map of the future, it gives you a tremendous advantage. And so that's one of the things that I do with entrepreneurs is, you know, it's decide, plan, and predict is what it comes down to. It's like, do you know what you want is the decide part. And you'd be surprised how many very high level entrepreneurs I work with who aren't 100% sure about that. You know, one of the entrepreneurs I worked with recently, he was making $2 million of net profit to himself as the business owner per month. And we got him up to $17 million per month of personal income from his business within the course of 8 months. And most of the time that we spent working on those things, that was like 15, 20 minutes. We talk a little business strategy at the end. The vast majority of the discussions had to do with trying to figure out what he really wanted and how to refocus the energy of that money. Because in a way, money is kind of like a form of energy. You know, you can apply to accomplish all kinds of goals.
100%.
And so, yeah, I spend a lot of time helping people understand, or decide, I should say, which direction am I going to go? And then do you have a plan to get there? As we want to make sure it's not just floating in this abstract space in your mind, but it becomes a set of milestones with concrete steps that you can take to get there. Because we know that that funnels our energy toward what we want. You know, as they say, if you don't have goals, it's not that not having goals is a bad way to live life. It's just that you're going to be at the mercy of whatever grabs your attention, and you're going to wander this way, wander that way. And if you like doing life that way, I'm certainly not judging you. I just know that most people who are listening to your podcast are people who are very driven, who have goals, who want to take destiny into their own hands. And so people like us, we set goals because we know that it's going to help us to accomplish something more directly than if we just kind of float it. So that's why we're going to decide, and then we're going to plan how to actually get there. And then that third step is predict. And that's where we slow down. And this is where sometimes going slower actually helps us to speed up to accomplish our goals. Another central theme of the coaching work that I do with entrepreneurs is slow down to speed up, which sounds so ridiculous. But if you do slow down enough, instead of rushing to try to accomplish your goals, so often you realize there's a more elegant way of getting there quicker with less effort, less time, less risk, less stress. And so if you slow down enough, what we're really talking about is we're trying to build a richer mental map of the future. And so we do that through a number of different processes. One of them is storytelling, which you said, you know, people love hearing a story. But part of the reason is because our brains are literally wired for transmitting higher amounts of data through story than any other form of communication. And so what I mean by that is that if, for example, I give you a whole bunch of variables about what could happen in the future, and each one potentially has multiple branches. You know, if you think about how life goes, so if Brian decides he's going to buy a Tesla, but his real goal, his real goal might be something that is, that's nonsense. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. Let me back up a step. What I'm trying to get at is that ultimately, if you are clear about where you're trying to go and you've decided on a plan to get there, there's usually too many variables that are still unknown. They're like question marks as you project your mind out into the future. So if this works, then I'll go this way. But if it doesn't, we're going to go that way. So you have these branching trees, right? Reality is like, if you think of it like a multiverse, each time there's a potential different direction you could go, you have new opportunities. And our brains just can't handle that. It's just too many variables, too many possibilities. But if you shift into story mode, it allows you to more elegantly capture all of that data in a way that the brain is better able to handle. So some of the things we do is we say, okay, we're going to go from A to B. Let's actually talk it through. And we say, okay, it's week one. What have we accomplished? And we're doing theoretical, like we've probably accomplished this. All right, let's just choose one of the variables. Let's say we did accomplish 100% of it. Now what's going to happen in week two? Well, by week two, we're, oh, shoot. And it's like suddenly the brain kicks into a higher gear. We realize that there's something that we had never thought of before. And it's only accessible to the human mind because we put it in a story format that allows us to suddenly see how everything would filter together if that was the scenario that we found ourselves in the future. And we're able to better predict and prepare to sidestep the obstacles that would come up. Like, we don't have enough employees for that, or we're going to need a copywriter, or I need to start training on my sales skills to be ready for that moment, or whatever it is that you start to see in the future that allows you to get to your goal faster. That happens because you slowed down enough to speed up through the process of enriching your mental map of the future.
That is great. All right, you guys, you just got some amazing information right there. If you need to go back, rewind, rewatch, like those three things about how to really plan out your mental map of your business, gold. Thank you so much for that, Todd. That was amazing.
Glad it was useful to you, Brian, and your listeners.
Yeah. Well, it actually kind of reminds me of something, and I just, my own curiosity, this is something that I've been telling and teaching to people for a little bit now. It's basically like, if you're trying to put together a speech or a long form video that you're going to do, and you've got the general concept, but everything else is kind of clunky. I would advise people to go and just, in your kitchen, in your office, wherever you can be alone, stand up, pace the floor, and pretend like you're speaking to a huge audience or speaking into the camera, because that act of just speaking it, in a sense, telling your story out loud, all of a sudden things will start to coalesce. Like you'll get, okay, this is how I'm going to flow from bullet point A to bullet point B. Or this is the concept that's going to tie these two weird things I stated in the beginning together. And you wouldn't get there on your own, just trying to think and write it out, you know, but once you're up moving and speaking, it starts to click. Is that kind of similar?
It is. Although what you just described, I think of that more like running a software program that you just wrote, and then it shows you where you need to debug, you know, until you actually run the software. Sometimes you don't see where it gets stuck, which is, it's very similar. It's like, it's much better, really, what you're talking about. If you have the capacity to do a practice run of something, that's better than just doing it in your mind's eye, right? Because you're seeing in reality, how did my speech unfold? Where did I get stuck? Where are the spots that I need to refine it further, come up with better examples for that? It allows you to go through that process in a much smoother way. And so I think what you're talking about is, like, if you have the opportunity to practice, then do so. So for example, if I could actually run my business through for the next 2 months and then see where it broke down, go back in time and start over, then it would be kind of like what you're saying, where I'm running through my speech, I see where it breaks down, I make some edits, I come back and I try it again. Did it work that time? Almost. I need to change one more spot. If we could do that in reality, like you can with a speech, that'd be even better than what I'm talking about. But because we can't travel back in time and actually rerun, that's why it has to be that mental map. It only exists in your mind's eye at that point when you're trying to project your mind two months or even 6 months or 2 years into the future.
I guess what I was really getting at, well, until Elon invents time travel, what I was really getting at was from a psychologist point of view, because I'm curious about the brain and how it works, is the neurons and the processes that are firing up in here when I'm in the kitchen putting a speech together, or if I'm sitting at my desk trying to create that mental map, is the processes in the brain the same thing?
It is. Yeah. It's just, you have better feedback in the scenario that you gave. Yeah. In both cases, you're creating a mental hologram of the future. And it's just that in one, you're actually practicing it and saying it out loud, which is not quite actually giving the speech, right? But it's a much closer approximation than you could get from just thinking in your mind, you know, like what will things look like? But yeah, so that's one of the reasons why sometimes during the decision-making processes, we'll actually use decision trees. You know, so a decision tree might look like, say a woman's trying to decide if she's gonna have an outdoor wedding or an indoor wedding, but there's some variables she doesn't know, like, is it gonna rain on my wedding day? And so she's got an inside venue and an outside venue, but then there's other variables that load on, like factors that she might care about that determine whether she would choose the inside location versus the outdoor. And so she might say it would involve more family and be more fun to do it outside. It would cost more to do it inside, but less likely to have problems at the last minute if it's going to rain. And so sometimes what we'll do is we'll create a decision tree, and we'll have a point on the decision tree that represents an unknown variable, but we will actually put a percentage, like the likelihood of that happening. So let's say we look at historical data and we know that 70% of the time it's not raining in this particular state. And so we can say the base rate, statistically speaking, for rain is that 70% chance it's not gonna rain. And then that can actually inform which direction we go, because we know the odds of something happening. And so the richer your mental map, the more you learn about the world in general, the better you get at estimating those unknowns and putting sort of a statistical chance on each one. So if, for example, if we say we really need to scale up our sales team, and I believe we can go out and hire 3 people by the end of next week to help work on this aspect of our business, you might be able to get a good sense from your own past experience for what are the odds that I'm going to hire 3 people and all 3 of them are going to be ace salespeople. They're going to be A players who operate really well right from the start. And if you don't have that information from past experience as a business owner, sometimes it makes sense to go try to get that base rate information from someone that does have that experience. It's one of the keys to productivity is don't reinvent the wheel. Don't try to do it all yourself. You don't have to make all the mistakes before you succeed. Go talk to someone that has. So you find someone that's hired multiple salespeople and you ask them, hey, what are the odds? And they say, probably 1 out of 3. So you're going to have to run that same process 3 times before you're going to have 3 A player salespeople. So that allows you to adjust your prediction of the future of how long it's going to take you to find the best people that you need.
That great. Yep. Another great key there, paying or going to people that have done it before for the information that you don't have yet, instead of doing everything on your own, which is the whole key behind coaching or consulting, you know?
Right.
So you don't have to do it on your own. Yeah.
Yeah. One thing, if any of you guys are consultants listening to this, if you want to add this to your tool belt, if you don't already use this concept, is just to remind people who are thinking about working with you that one of the things they're buying in essence, in terms of the ROI of spending money on your consulting services, is the ability to look around the corner. You've walked the path enough times that you can tell them what's around that next corner. But the business owner may be in a position where they don't know. Like if we try to roll out that software suite, what's going to go wrong? Or, you know, if we try to raise our prices, what's going to go wrong? Or what's going to go right? What are the opportunities we don't even realize that we haven't tapped into? And if we knew about those things, we would instantly, you know, be doing that. So those are really good selling points for a consultant who helps people to accomplish a very specific outcome in their area of their domain of expertise.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%, because people, we're hardwired to be cautious, to be careful. We're always wanting certainty in our lives, right, and in our situations. And if you, as the coach or as the consultant, can put it out there that, like you said, one of the reasons you're hiring me is to help you look around the corner, so that when you look at the situation and think, well, this is unknown after that situation has transpired, well, no, it's not unknown to me, and I can tell you and help you guide through it. That's right. Super. Whew, that just gave me chills on the whole sales side of things. I love that.
Yep. Yeah. In fact, my business partner and I, Jackson Callum, and I just, you know, in our work with First Class Business, which is a branch of our mutual efforts to try to unlock the next level for business owners who don't want to just think about the future, but they also want to be able to look at the future and see all of the various components that are going to take a long time. Sometimes what we say is, you know, you want to start thinking about results and not time. You as the business owner don't have time to operationalize and sort of optimize every layer of your business from the ground up, you know, from the vision of what we're trying to accomplish all the way to having the marketing and the sales and all of your funnels and everything in place. That whole structure of what allows a business to grow is what we target, but it's just kind of overwhelming for a business owner to think about. So instead, one of the things we do is we say, just remember that what you're really trying to accomplish here is not just being more effective with your own thinking. You're trying to accomplish a result, right? And so we help them to think about the ROI by reminding them that what our specialty is in this particular business that we formed together, firstclassbusiness.io, what we do is we find the teams that can accomplish things faster so that you can delegate to those teams through us. So you don't have to be the hub. I know a lot of entrepreneurs, especially when starting out, experience this where they're the hub and there's all of these spokes, right? Different departments or different people you've hired, and every question comes back to you. And so at some point your mindshare is just tapped out. You can't even respond to people fast enough to unblock them to keep going. And so we try to remove that feeling of being stuck as the the hub that's getting all the questions, and add in another high level thinker who's doing that kind of projecting to the future, saying, well, if you're trying to get from A to B and you need these marketing services done, what if we installed both a hub and the teams to be able to accomplish it? So this is another example of just trying to take an end result that somebody wants and help them to recognize the ROI that's on that. And it's sometimes, if you can talk to someone about the end result, the money becomes a non-issue. Because if I can help you, like if you're trying to get through a door and on the other side of that door is $1 million and it's on fire, and I'm trying to sell you an axe and this axe costs $200,000, under normal circumstances, you'd look at my axe and be like, I'm not paying $200,000 for an axe. But if I say the money is $1 million is on the other side of this wooden door and it's currently on fire, the faster you can get through this, the more of that $1 million you can salvage. Suddenly it becomes a no-brainer. Yes, here's the $200,000, give me the axe. They break through and they recover $800,000 of that money. So essentially you're just framing it for them as, this is you accomplishing the goal that you want to faster, which breaks people out of the mindset that we often are taught, you know, just as humans by our families, which is don't spend money, conserve, you know, try to keep everything small and careful, because if you go into debt, that's bad, right? And when we get into the business world, we discover that sometimes it's the opposite. You know, the faster you can unlock new sources of revenue, even if it costs you some money to get there, if it's a fairly guaranteed process to move towards those higher levels of revenue, then you want to spend as much money as fast as you can if you're spending a dollar to get back three. So just another idea that I found particularly useful. It's one of the decision tools I use when I decide if I'm going to hire an employee. Also something I use when I'm deciding if I'm going to hire a consultant or even a coach for myself, is what is the end goal? Stop thinking about what do they cost. Think about what is it worth it to me if they can speed me up in accomplishing that goal.
All right. Well, so, okay, there's two things, but one of the things that caught me just right then is you said that's one of the things you consider when hiring a coach or a consultant for yourself.
Yeah.
You do that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I've hired some of the biggest names out there that you'd recognize if I name them. Some of them I have NDAs with, but you know, some of them like Ari Mizell, for example, the author of Less Doing, I've worked with him 6 months out of this past year. And I hired him, even though I'm a productivity coach myself, he's also a productivity coach. Well, I practice what I preach. And you know, just because I know stuff, just because I have the head knowledge, doesn't mean that I'm applying it as well as I could to myself. I've sometimes had the thought, man, I'm such a good coach, right? After I have some breakthrough with a client or something, you know, I have that sort of self-congratulatory thought. And I'm like, if only I could be a coach to myself, I'd accomplish so much more. And then I'm like, wait a minute, there's a lot of talented coaches out there. I should hire one. And so I absolutely do. I work with coaches consistently. Part of it too is that if someone asked me, well, do you have a coach? It would be rather strange if I said, you know, coaching is so valuable, all business owners need one. And I said, well, no, I don't, you know, I don't use a coach. That would be kind of a strange thing to say. And I've had multiple people ask me that during an introduction call where we're trying to decide if this is a good fit or not. They'll ask me that question. And I say, absolutely. I always have a coach. In fact, I spend a lot of my budget on coaching because it keeps expanding what I'm able to accomplish. And so I actually get toward my goals faster with coaches than without.
Amen. I just wanted to kind of drive that point home for anybody that might be skeptical about coaching coaches. Mm. Every good coach, every consultant that I have come across, that I have personally been mentored by, they have coaches themselves. So, and you just heard it here, folks, there's a reason why. Okay, so going back to the end result that a business owner wants to have, an entrepreneur wants to have to level themselves up, level their business up. When we spoke previously before getting on this podcast, you mentioned something about how to kind of help almost guide out a pre-mental map vision, you know, not going down the complete rabbit hole of the mental map, but kind of getting their feet wet in the concept. Mm-hmm. You had mentioned something about the one simple question. And I was wondering if you could go into that a little bit in the time we've got left for the audience here.
Yeah, I would love to. So it's my favorite question in all of the coaching work we do. It's also sometimes the most difficult question, and it's not something a business owner can necessarily answer right away. But we're talking about the point at which we've identified clearly a goal for the business, and we've said, this is what I want to achieve. Or sometimes it's a personal goal, you know, a certain amount of revenue that's spit back as profit to the business owner, something like that. But as soon as you've achieved, recognized what that goal is, then we begin the process of working through the theory of constraints. And that process often starts with the question, well, why don't we just do that tomorrow? So let's say the goal is, I want to go from 70,000 a month to 100,000 a month. Okay, let's just do it tomorrow. And of course, at first, you know, you get that reaction of, what? No, that's not possible. And that leads to the question, well, why not? What would stop us? And that helps you to very quickly zero in on what would stop you. Sometimes is the bottleneck. Sometimes you have to keep digging deeper than that. So the answer might be, well, we don't have enough salespeople to take that many calls to be able to raise our revenue. Okay, well, maybe hiring salespeople is the bottleneck right now. No, it's actually not, because we don't have enough cash flow to hire right now. Oh, well, could cash flow be the bottleneck? Let's take a look at that. And sometimes we drill down in there and we discover that that's not actually the bottleneck either. And so the deeper you go with that question, the more likely you are to land on whatever it is, what the bottleneck is. But it's a simple question that removes all the complexity, because people often want to say, okay, let's start diagramming out the business and let's search for those bottlenecks. I'm like, no, don't just tell me off the top of your head. Well, why don't we just accomplish it tomorrow? And it very quickly helps us to identify what the bottleneck is. And sometimes, I'm just going to say this because of the interesting topic you started this podcast episode with, sometimes the bottleneck is an unknown. In other words, we haven't decided yet. For example, with choosing a niche, you know, I don't know if this is the right niche. Sometimes that is the bottleneck. And it's really helpful, and it's a huge weight off your shoulders when you recognize that for what it is. Oh, the big question mark on my path towards success that's sitting right there, that's blocking me from moving past it and knowing what to do after that, that is my bottleneck, which then opens up all of the creativity and intelligence you have as a human being, as a resourceful person, to crush that goal of finding out, well, what are my options? Who can I talk to? What tests have I not run? Could I double or triple the number of consultants that I'm bringing in to give me ideas? Could I hire somebody to be my consultant on choosing a niche? Whatever those things are that are unknown, sometimes those big question marks are the bottleneck. And so once you recognize that, you can more elegantly solve them.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect way to go into that and bring it back full circle to where we started. Nicely done. Nicely done.
Thanks. I was wondering if that was part of your genius that you brought us back full circle to that moment.
Well, I can't claim that, you know. It's like, I'll pat myself on the back later, maybe once I rewatch this, but for right now, it's flying by the seat of my pants.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, it's been a fascinating discussion for me. Just talking about this, I can tell you've worked with a lot of people who have some very interesting questions. So it always makes a conversation like this rich and interesting.
Yeah, I think we've got a lot of value here for people today. And so speaking of value, where can people find more out about you? And if they want to, you know, just kind of see the body of your work or engage with you as a consultant, or even you and Jackson at your brand new company, how can we get people in touch with you?
Yeah. Well, I primarily work with word of mouth clients these days. So I don't put a lot of time. You'd have a hard time finding me on Instagram, Twitter, all of those various places. I don't, as a productivity coach, I don't spend time on those places. I have an assistant who takes some of my ideas and throws them out there. The reason I don't spend a lot of time is because often what happens is you just get sucked into a rabbit hole and you're not really working directly and accomplishing your goals very well. If you just are always on that treadmill, always just running circles, great for networking though. And so for me, the best place, if you want to find out just more about how I think and, you know, what my services are that are available, it's toddsnydercoaching.com. It's my website. You can read blog articles there. You can sign up to get email articles if you want. And that's TODDSNYDER, coaching.com. And my partnership with Jackson, the Done For You services for people that want to level up their marketing or just really grow fast. And that's at firstclassbusiness.io. And just remember the .io spelled out first class business, not the numeral one, but F-I-R-S-T. And that's a business that has been expanding rapidly as we try to meet the need that we know is far bigger than we'll ever be able to swallow ourselves. There's just such a tremendous need for business owners to be able to offload some of the mindshare to be able to grow their business. But it's been a fun project.
Yep, absolutely. Get away from being the hub. Well, Todd, again, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today. Again, great value, great conversation. I absolutely enjoyed it. And I wish you all the best. Thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure, Brian. And I'll keep listening. Thanks for producing this great podcast.
Oh, my pleasure, man. Take care. We'll see you soon, hopefully.
Thank you so much for watching this video. I truly hope you got some value out of it. And if you did, go ahead and leave a comment down below. What was your biggest takeaway? And again, if you did get some value, remember, you can see more videos just like this by clicking on either one of these two recommended videos here. And help boost this in the algorithm. Help spread this information to other people who need this help. Go ahead and give this channel a like and subscribe. Tell YouTube that you found this valuable. So take care, and I'll see you in the next one.